Back to RHI next. The oral evidence may have finished at the RHI inquiry, but the revelations keep coming. The latest written evidence to be published on the inquiry website has raised significant questions over some of the original testimony already submitted by both the DUP and Sinn Féin. Let's speak to the newsletter's political editor, Sam McBride. Morning to you, Sam.
Morning, Stephen.
So what's this about Sinn Féin and the super SPADs and who paid for them?
We've now got evidence that the super SPAD, so-called, for Sinn Féin, Aidan McAteer, is somebody who was really given a role which let him operate outside the special advisor system because he was barred by law from being part of that system. He was being paid through a funding stream at the Assembly, so he was getting public money for that job, even though he was not supposed to be acting as a special advisor under the law. So Sinn Féin found this way to circumvent the law, and that is contrary to what Martin O'Millier told the inquiry, where he said that his understanding was that Sinn Féin paid his salary. He said that he couldn't be paid from public funds. We now learn from the inquiry he was paid from public funds, and more than that, we learn that he was paid from a funding stream from the Assembly, which was meant to scrutinise the work of the executive. Actually, what was happening was Assembly funding was being used to fund the most senior manager within Sinn Féin's executive team. So what little scrutiny there might have been from the Assembly was being reduced because actually it was paying for the executive function of government, not the scrutiny form, which is part of the role of the legislature.
How did the executive allow that to happen?
Well, there's a huge question, I think, for the head of the civil service, Sir Malcolm McKibben. He was well aware of this. The DUP were well aware.
He's not anymore. He was head of it, yeah.
The DUP say that they raised concerns about this, but they ultimately pragmatically worked the system. But I think from the civil service point of view, they knew this was happening. They knew it was, at the very least, a bending of the rules. And for whatever reason, that continued.
So our public money went to someone when it shouldn't have. Are we going to get our money back?
There's no question about Mr. McAteer being eligible for public funding in a broad sense, despite what Martin O'Millier said to the inquiry. I think Martin O'Millier should have maybe mangled his answer somewhat in what he said. It was clear that this individual could not be paid as a special advisor. So those are the top posts, £92,000 in some cases, for people to advise Stormont ministers. He couldn't do that. He was barred by law because he had an IRA conviction for a serious offence. However, what he could be employed to do was to work in the Assembly. So that was what nominally on paper he was being employed to do. Actually, what he was doing was he was being paid to work in the Assembly. Actually, he was working in the executive.
And Sam, the DUP SPAD, Timothy Kearns, has told the inquiry why a significant email was only handed to the RHI inquiry more than a year after it was requested.
That's right. This is very interesting evidence. This relates to Timothy Johnston, the most senior DUP backroom figure. And really, it's central to trying to understand why cost controls were delayed in the summer of 2015 when this scheme is running out of control. And really, this email, which emerged at the very last moment in October, just before Mr. Johnston gave evidence, significantly undermines his story that he was never told about this issue in that period. And while Mr. Kearns gives quite a technical explanation as to why he got hold of this email at such a late stage, in simple terms, basically what he says is that once he left the DUP's employment, he had no access to his DUP email account. There was government business being transacted on this email account. That's the dup.org.uk email address. He says he tried to log into that and he couldn't, and that may have been because the DUP had changed the password to the account once he left. And he didn't think that was suspicious or anything because he had gone. But he then says that he remembered there had been a default password for that account. He tried that. He got in almost by the back door, if you like, it would seem. And he accessed a whole series of emails that were relevant to the inquiry. The big question then is, why were they not handed over to the inquiry by the DUP if they control the server?
Another question, what's Sir Patrick Coughlin going to do about it? Like, if he was telling everybody, you've got to hand it over, if we have a major political party that didn't, what are the sanctions and how would that inquiry or anybody associated with that inquiry have any authority going forward if they didn't make an example of someone that just doesn't hand it over, Sam?
Well, there will be several hearings of the inquiry to really wrap things up this week. We may hear that touched upon, but it will also be interesting to see what the DUP explanation for this is, because while we've got Mr. Kearns' written statement saying from his end of things why this happened, Mr. Johnston was the person at the other end of this email, and of course the DUP as a party controls this server and holds this material. So it'll be interesting to see, first of all, before we get to any sort of sanction stage, what they say as to why this didn't go into the inquiry.
And finally, Sam, we heard in Sir Geoffrey Donaldson's interview with me that the DUP, when they were advocating Brexit before the referendum, they never thought out the scenario of what would happen with the Irish border conundrum. They never thought out anything associated with a backstop scenario. They didn't have a policy on it, never thought about it.
And I think it's very difficult for anybody in a senior position in the DUP to publicly admit that really they didn't have a plan. But, I mean, anybody looking at this can clearly see that is what happened. They weren't the only ones who argued for Brexit who hadn't really thought through what would happen. But I think it's particularly clear from the DUP's point of view that it was almost an easy thing to do, to go with what they ideologically believed in the full expectation it would never happen. Once it did happen, there was shock and to a degree consternation at the top of the party.
To be fair to him, it was good to have Sir Geoffrey back on.
Well, it's interesting to see that he is back on. We're all obviously looking for straws in the wind at the moment as to what's going on within the party. The fact that they haven't been on your programme for almost a couple of years and he now pops up. Whatever the story is behind that, it's interesting to note